silence.
Oppenheimer!
I think they're talking about us. No way.
I myself am strange and unusual.
This is Nerd Pride Radio!
Nerd alert!
These nerds are a threat to our way of life.
See, this is the stuff that brings nerds together.
So it's sort of social. Demented and sad, but social, right?
If I'm interested in it, then by definition, it is nerdy.
Are you in loser denial or something?
I'm a nerd, and I'm pretty proud of it.
My dad's a nerd.
And welcome to episode 185 of Nerd Pride Radio. 185, the record for throwing a playing card is 185 feet, set by Kevin St. Ange in 1979. So ask me how I'm doing today.
How you doing?
How you doing?
Thank you, boys. I am awesome. My name is Mike Jones. I am a D&D slash Pathfinder nerd, a history nerd, a sci-fi nerd, a comic book nerd, computer nerd, movie nerd, comedy nerd, science nerd, gaming nerd. Plus, there's like seven other kinds of nerd I only wish I was nerdy enough to be. You're listening to Nerd Pride Radio, the place I go every week to hang around about all the nerd stuff that just won't fit in my skull anymore. And my co-host this week is Audacity, which is really not responding well for me here. Hold on. Let me turn up Audacity just a hair. There we go. Is that better? Do I sound awesome? I knew it. All right. But before we get started with this podcast, that's right, it's time for yet another installment of our all-too-frequent segment, Mike Was Wicked Wrong. Okay. First off, in last week's episode, I've got two of them here. Last week's episode, I commented on how the word costumer throws me because it's spelled exactly like customer, and I can't believe nobody said anything. They're not spelled exactly the same. The O and the U were switched. And here's the worst part about that. I didn't know that. I literally, every time I've seen the word costumer, I've read it as customer. Every time. Every time I see costumer, I read it as customer. And then finally I realize that, oh, wait, that's supposed to be costumer. I get it. And I never noticed that it was spelled differently. Literally, that's how much I glossed over the vowels in the word. Apparently, my reading style, I don't need every letter. Seriously, who's going to look at every single letter in a word? And, like, I'm so used to the word customer, I just assumed that that's the word I was looking at. They're not spelled alike. I mean, they're very similar, but you switch the O and the U. And I couldn't tell the difference between them until literally I'm listening to it, and I'm like, wait a minute, is that right? Is that, are they really, I mean, as I'm listening to my own podcast, I'm hearing my words, and I'm thinking, They're not spelled the same, are they? And then I had to write them down, and I went, oh my god, those are two different words. That's weird. I mean, it freaked me out. I just never noticed. So, I was wrong. But also, last week, I was asked about what podcasts I would want to have people do, of all the people who have been to Gen Con with me. And I realized only as I was listening to it that, oh, wait a minute. I didn't do anything about my brother Kyle, my mother, my sons Jacob and Aiden. They've all gone to Gen Con with me. And I didn't include them in this. But, yeah, that's okay. None of them listen to this podcast anyway. So I'm sure they weren't insulted, right? Yeah, I'm sure that's fine. So, okay.
Dad, I would be insulted.
I know you would, Noah. And I'm actually kidding. Kyle and Nana both listen to this podcast. Aiden does occasionally, and I don't know if Jacob does or not. He sometimes has indicated that he does, but other times I don't think he's a very busy man, so I don't know. But anyway, I feel bad for leaving them out, so there you go. Also from last week's podcast, updates. I said if you wanted to keep your pulse on the your finger on the pulse of the irrational Trump voter, that you needed to follow the Inquirer. Just look at the cover of the Inquirer every week, and if it's going to talk about politics, if it's going to talk about Trump, then, man, that's what these people are thinking. And it turns out that also works for the Globe and the The Examiner. There's several of these tabloid rags, and they all have similar kinds of stuff. But last week I mentioned the headline that said, World War III, it's coming. And, you know, again, you would think that that's a bad thing, except that apparently for fans of the Inquirer, World War III is going to be awesome because it means that Trump will crush our 8 enemies. And I said last week that I knew 3 of those enemies were Iraq, Russia, and Syria, and I knew that because of the previous week when it listed the dead men walking that Trump was going to put a hit out on, and it was the leaders of Iraq, Russia, and Syria. And now, I'm now looking at this week's. I found that same issue. It was still on the stands. After I recorded, I went out and it was still there. So I'm like, okay, this time I'll browse. Let's take a look. And I found our other 5 enemies. So Iraq, Russia, Syria, North Korea, of course. I think I guessed that one. That's only half of our enemies. The other half, Iran, ISIS, the Mexican drug cartels, and Boko Haram. There you go. Those are our 8 enemies. So, only 5 of our 8 enemies are Islamic. So, we don't have anything against Islam. We're even-handed, right? I mean, it's only 5. So, I think we're good. Okay. There. Now it's time for the meticulously plotted portion of the podcast. This is the time for me when I talk about whatever has been on my mind during the last week. If something strikes me as interesting during the course of my busy week, I add it to my master list, and the very best stuff off of that list gets spewed out all over you guys every week when I record. You lucky dogs. So, straight into it. First thing's going to be my gaming table. I've got Dungeon Master's Guide. I've got 12-sided die. Role-playing games, video games, board games, card games, any games. If it fits on my gaming table, then I am here to share it with you. And I am going to share with you Mario Kart 8 for the Switch. Because my son Aiden just bought a Switch here at home. And one of the games he bought was Mario Kart. And I've got to tell you, first off, it is an official Switch game because it tastes just as shitty as Breath of the Wild tasted. Apparently, it's a thing. You've got to lick them. You have to know. And yeah, it does. It tastes terrible. But Mario Kart is fantastic. Oh my god, I can't.
I know, Dad. It's awesome.
Okay, you'll have to yell actually quite that loud. This new mic picks you up really well. So
good.
But
is this good?
Yeah. You know what? It looks good on the soundboard here, but I don't know if that's really. It is, but you know, if you want to join me for real, you can come over here and talk. But that's up to you. You don't have to.
Okay.
So anyway, this is Noah. He's coming.
Dad, I'm just saving you from a mic was wrong on next episode, but it's not Mario Kart 8 for the Nintendo Switch. It's Mario Kart 8 Deluxe.
Oh, it is. It's Mario Kart 8 Deluxe for the Nintendo Switch.
And all the characters are amazing.
They have a lot of characters available.
Such as Bowser Jr., King Boo, and the Inkling boy and girl from Splatoon, just to name a few.
And I don't care about any of that because I like playing as Shy Guy. I love Shy Guy on a moped. It is my favorite racer. And here's the magic. Okay, can't lean on the table, dude.
Oh, here. Sorry, but my brother, but Jacob, likes to be a green Shy Guy on Link's stuff. So he's the cosplay guy.
Very nice. Alright, it's got a lot of different characters, a lot of customization on your vehicles. You can't lean on the table, see, that's why I was moving it. There you go. No, it's alright, we're getting set up. Alright, and the controls feel just like playing the old Mario Kart that I got so good on, the original Mario Kart, and oh my god, I love this game. I love it. Just feels good. Even
I know, Dad. It's amazing.
It's still got now. It's got the blue shell, which I still hate the blue shell. I feel like it's unfair and
it's
terrible.
It's got the bullet bill, and then the new one that none of us have seen on the Switch, the 8 ball, as I call it.
Uh-huh.
It summons 8 items from the game, such as Star and both shells and Banana, and murders anyone that it touches.
And look, but the blue shell is rare, which is the way it should be.
And it only hits the first person in of the enemy team.
Right. It seeks out whoever's in the lead or whoever's in the lead of the enemy team if you're playing teams. But here's the thing. It just feels natural. I can race on this thing, and it just feels right. It is like being home. It's playing on the Nintendo Wii. I loved Mario Kart on the Nintendo Wii, but it never, with that steering wheel, it never felt natural. It never felt like real Mario Kart to me. I mean, I had a great time. It looked right. Had awesome gameplay, but it just wasn't quite the same. This one...
And the newest mechanics, such as wall driving, or even better, ceiling driving, fit in perfectly with the controls.
Oh, they've got some really cool gravity things that go on. But here's the thing. I sat down to it, and in my first game that I played...
He was first, and I beat Eli.
I completely kicked Noah and Eli's butt. That's all that matters.
But I was in second.
Now, Aiden can still top me most of the time, which I'm a little... I feel a little bad about it. I need to practice, but here's the deal. Let me tell you a story. Back when I first had kids, and we went to go see my mom and dad, here I had kids. I hadn't been able to game for a long time, and I sat down for a game of Mario Kart with my dad. And here's the thing. My dad didn't have any kids in the house. My dad had a lot of time for video games, and we sat down to some Mario Kart, and my dad whipped my ass at it, and it was a lot of fun. And he was so proud of himself for taking me down. Well, I kind of felt that way on this one. Like again, I got enough of the muscle memory, and this game just felt right. Oh, it was so nice to sit down and be able to beat my kids at a game. It just felt good, because I don't get a lot of practice in video games. I'm way behind. So this was a good one. So yeah, look, I don't know if Mario Kart 8 Deluxe for the Nintendo Switch... I can't tell you if it's an awesome game for everyone. I assume it is. It's really good gameplay. The levels are awesome. The graphics are great. The cars are wonderful. And again, for me, it plays out really well. Noah's back. That was him going in and out to get a drink.
Excuse me.
But I do know that it is awesome for me. If you were a fan of early Mario Kart...
You'll be
a fan of this one because it feels right.
It includes three... Rainbow Roads. Oh. Rainbow Road Newest, Rainbow Road the 64, and Rainbow Road the First.
Yes.
In the NES.
He's played Rainbow it way more than I have at this point. But like I said, just had a good time. So I highly recommend, if you've got a chance to play the latest Mario Kart, 8 for the Wii or 8 Deluxe for the Switch, man, those things are fun. It's a really good game. So there you go. All right. Next up, I'm actually going to do a couple of...
Fingertips, fingertips, fingertips.
That's right, fingertips. These are just short topics that I haven't really fleshed out into a full segment, but, you know, just want to mention them. First off, I'm out driving with my son today, and he is talking about all of his cousins in Texas, my brother Kyle's kids. And so, Kyle, this is really, it's just for you and for Mom, I suppose. But, he's trying to describe Kyle's fourth child, Gabe, he's like, oh, you know, he's the one who looks like a little Kyle. And I'm like, oh, yeah, Gabe. And so, just so you know, that's all Eli ever refers to him as. Gabe's name just doesn't come to mind. So instead, he just calls him, yeah, you know, little Kyle. So, there you go. All right, the other fingertips thing I have, and this one's for everybody, I suppose. I'm getting old. I'm getting old, and it sucks. I went to the dentist. Did I tell you I went to the dentist the other week? A couple weeks ago. And I went in because I had an obvious cavity. It was a cavity that I could see. It didn't look bad, but it needed to be fixed up. And so I went in, and she looked and said, oh, yeah, there it is. Yeah, we can get that. She said, that's not even really a problem. She said, I'm not worried about that one. No, the thing I'm concerned about is this tooth over here. And she shows me the pictures of it, like she's got the camera in there, she's showing me on a little screen, and it's got a little chip taken out of one corner of it. I knew there was a chip out of it, that one's fine with me. All right, I understand it's there. Wasn't really worried about it. But she says, but you'll notice, okay, it's chipped here. But now, can you see these? Can you see these lines? Those are like little hairline fractures. Like you can see those stress marks there on the tooth. That's a tooth that's just waiting to crumble. It's just any day now, it's either the top of it's going to crumble off, or the thing's just going to split completely down the middle, and you're going to lose that tooth. So therefore, we really need to get a crown on here, which, you know, crown is going to be super expensive. But we'll get it done, and I don't know when that's coming up. We'll have that scheduled next week or two, I suppose. But, man, it sucks. It sucks that she's looking, and it wasn't even the tooth I was worried about. And she looks in there, and she points all this out, and she explains what we need to do. She's like, and it's, you know, there's no decay on it or anything. The tooth itself, you know, the material is fine. It's just getting old, and it's just starting to crumble. I'm like, wait a minute, my teeth will just fall apart on their own someday? That's terrible. So now I guess I'm gonna have to switch to a completely liquid diet. I can't put any stress on my teeth from now on. I don't want to lose my teeth. I'm gonna have to start flossing. Nobody wants to do that. It's just
flossing. That's my mortal enemy.
Right, flossing. Doesn't that sound terrible?
I know.
Oh man. So anyway, and it, as it turns out, I can't really go to an all liquid diet because I really like to eat because I'm a huge fat guy. But man, I hate being old. That sucks. So other than that, I am young at heart. I have the body of a really, really fat 20-year-old. So, you know, perfectly healthy except for that one tooth. I'm sure that's it, just that one. But other than that, I'm great. Ah, I hate getting old. Okay, now, next up, you're going to need to get the little ones out of the room. Make sure you're sitting down for this.
Nerd rage came flashing back, and I just looked at him and went, Burr!
That's right, it's time for some nerd rage. Noah, while I was playing that, Noah actually got up and left the room. He's out. Because, you know, I told him he had to. So, he's very funny. All right, here it is. I am sure I have ranted about this at some point in the past, but it just happened again today, and I can't. I know it's petty. I know it's petty. I can't help myself. Look, when the line says 12 items or less, how tough is it to not get in that line if you have more than 12 items? And I know it's a minor thing. Look, there's lots of lines at the grocery store, right? That's why I really prefer the self-checkout at Walmart. I love the self-checkout. You don't have to worry about any of this garbage. You just do it yourself. But you know, most stores don't have self-checkout. And so I look at the express lane, and it says 12 items or less. And look, if you've got 15 items, 16 items, I don't care. That's fine. All right? You're close enough. You know, you saw a short line, you've only got a few things, you're a little over, who cares? When you walk up in that line and you've got 30 items in your cart, stop that! I'm like obsessive about it. When I see people in line, even when I'm looking at their cart and I can see that they clearly have less than 12 items, I still obsessively, as I'm waiting in line behind people, I will count all of the items in their cart. I can't help myself. And like, I'll look up and I'll go, oh, see, yeah, they're fine, and I'll count, and I go, yep, 9, see, they're fine, there's nothing wrong with them, and then the next one, they're coming up, and it's like, I'm like, oh, that has got to be way over, 2, 4, 6, all right, there's 9, yeah, that's definitely 12, hold on, let's see, okay, now they move stuff, yeah, see, there you go, there it is, 21, what is wrong with them? I can't, it just, yeah, and why is it so infuriating? That's the part that, it's, again, it's a little thing, there's other lines,
it's
you know?
It's because you have ADHD, Dad. You have ADHD.
Is it my ADHD?
Probably, because I can't stand in line without noticing every little bit.
Well, yeah, but it's, I don't know, there's some justice thing here that just, you know, it, like, I know that those 6 extra items that they have in their cart, those 10 extra items that they have in their cart, yeah, that means there's an extra minute and a half in it for me, at most. All right? I know that. And usually, probably more like only about 30 seconds, and yet, oh, somehow that kills me. Drives me crazy. Oh, you know what?
I can't wait that long with ADHD. Trust me, Dad.
I know. Well, I can wait that long just fine. I have a phone with me. I could sit there and check my Facebook, or I could flip through my website. I have all sorts of things that I could be doing. I can entertain myself. It's not like it's wasted time, and yet, And yet it drives me batty. Oh, just, it's just something about the flagrantly just throwing the rules in my face right there in front of me. I just, oh, terrible people. Terrible people. I just, all right, anyway. All right, enough of that. Enough of that. You know what?
Ew! It appears you've received a sound drubbing.
Here's the one I've been trying to stall. I've been trying to put this one off. But it's time for Uncomfortable Topics. Yeah. This is Uncomfortable Topics where I talk about stuff that makes you a little itchy just to talk about. And usually when I say Uncomfortable Topics, I'm going to talk politics, but not this time. Yeah, how about that? Like I say, got to warn you ahead of time. I've got no real direction on this one. I don't even know that I have a point to make at all, which is typical of me. I don't know where I'm going with this, so I'm going to ramble. Again, like I say, I've been putting it off for a long time. This topic has been on my master list for 3, 4, 5 months, and I just, even when I get to Fingertips episodes, I keep skipping over it. And so that's why I'm stalling. What have I been now, a minute and a half that I'm stalling here? Because what I'm afraid of is that I don't want to come off as being stupid about this or being creepy or something like that. Anyway. All right, here it goes. My problem is this. When is it appropriate to appreciate the physical form of another human being? Because, I mean, look, I'm a heterosexual male, and I appreciate attractive women, and I can also sometimes appreciate an attractive man. There are some people who are just objectively attractive, all right? And I make a point of working very hard to never ogle a person, women generally, but never ogle someone in public. Make sure I'm not overtly staring at somebody, or for that matter, even covertly staring, because I'm of the opinion that even when you think you're being sneaky and stealing glances at somebody, I'm pretty sure they often know that that's what you're doing, and it's just tacky and tasteless, and I don't want to make people uncomfortable, and so therefore, I don't stare at them. I make a point of you know, I'm not going to go staring at somebody. I will look at them as is appropriate for the interaction that we're having, right? Which is normally, if it's a conversation, it's in the eyes. But again, you know, some people are very attractive, and you note that. And so therefore, my brother pointed this out in his, he was talking about the unwelcome behavior of men generally, male attention towards females in the gym, and how creepy dudes can be when it comes to women at the gym. And when he made this point, he talked about how, he made the same kind of point of some of it was the ogling and the intentionally getting in their line of vision, intentionally, you know, starting up conversations that you wouldn't do if it was a dude there. And he made mention of, you know, as a 40-something-year-old dude, it's always his, you know, one of his worries is that in any encounter, someone might think that he is staring inappropriately, that he's being creepy, that he's being, and I'm like, yeah, I recognize that. I feel that same, sense of dread that I don't want someone to think that I'm being inappropriate in any way. Like, for example, we come into work and you know, everyone comes in at about the same time in the morning, and first thing that happens, you come in the door, go around the corner, and then we all go up the stairs because you come in the door on the ground floor, and then we all work on first floor right above that. And as you're walking up the stairs, it will make me self-conscious that I always try and position myself so I am not following a woman up the stairs, because whether I find her attractive or don't find her attractive or whatever, I don't want her to think that I am staring at her ass all the way up the stairs. Because, you know, if you're following someone up the stairs, quite often their ass is right there in your face as you're following them. You know, even if you follow it at a respectable distance, you're still looking up at their ass. And you don't want to, I just don't want them to think that that's what I'm doing. God, am I just being creepy? Am I overly concerned about this? Because here's the other thing. People who I know very well, If I can see that they've changed something about their appearance, that they've, you know, done something different with their hair or bought a new outfit, or they've, I know that they've been working on losing some weight and they've lost some weight, I will make a comment that, hey, that looks really good on you. Hey, that's really cool. I like that. That is a good look. That is a, you know, and I'll make a comment on their appearance if it's a close friend, or at least someone I know well enough. And I know that they've, you know, they've done something different or they're working on it. They've made a change in their appearance that I know that they would appreciate it if someone noticed they made a change in their appearance. Okay, I'm cool with that. But then, like, we're in public, and I'm at the grocery store, and I run across some young 20-something girl who is, you know, whether she's attractive or not, I think she was reasonably attractive. That wasn't the point. The point was she had silver hair, which I've now once I saw her in the course of the next week, I noticed several people that have silver hair. Apparently that's the new in color. It's the new edgy thing. But I saw it, and her hair was silver, and I thought, wow, that looks really good. That's really cool. Is that... I thought it was a really cool look. I thought it was really awesome. And I would normally want to... I have this urge to say something and go, wow, I really like your hair. That looks awesome. And I think if I had, I think she would have taken it as a compliment, and it would have been fine. But then I thought, you know, but here she's, you know... She's young, and I'm, you know, twice her age, and am I just going to come off as a creepy dude that I compliment her appearance and I don't know who she is? That's terrible. So I was too paranoid about it, and so I didn't say anything. And this is the kind of thing that has happened before where, and quite often it's with someone who has a really unusual, hair color or mix of colors, and I just find it interesting, and I want to say something, and then I don't. Even though I think it would probably be appreciated. But, you know, what if it's not and I just come off as creepy? So I don't. And so I mentioned something about it to Jacob, who is wise in the ways of interpersonal relationships. And I made some kind of comment about, you know, how do you compliment or just note someone's appearance that, hey, I like that. That's what he says. Usually he says he phrases it in terms of, wow, I really dig your style. Because, you know, he's a groovy hep cat who can say dig. I don't know if I can pull that off as well. But he says, wow, I really like your style. I think that's cool. That's just, and I'm like, wow, that is a nice, easy way to do it. I still don't think I can get away with it. I think that still scares me. The idea that I'm going to compliment someone I don't know or barely know, on physical attributes, even in that sense, I don't know if I could pull it off. I'm too paranoid. I mean, if I give people compliments, like kids. See, kids now, a kid who is a stranger that you run into, I don't have any problem. You know, if a kid's going to be friendly, I don't have any problem talking to a kid, giving them a compliment on something. I'm always, obviously, with their parents there. I'm not going to approach a strange kid all alone. That would be even more creepy. But, in fact, just today that I ran across... The mom is pushing the cart, and the little girl is in the cart, and the little girl is talking away. And as I pass by, she waves to get my attention, and then she points at something on the side of her cart, and she says, purple. And I'm like, I didn't understand what she was saying, but I'm willing to engage in conversation. And so I chat with her a little bit, and she does it again. And finally, her mom says, oh, is there something purple on the cart? And I'm like, oh my gosh, there is something purple on your cart. Holy cow, you are such an intelligent young lady. That is really cool. Well, it was nice meeting you. See ya. And I walk off. And so, yeah, you can talk to a kid. But even then, when I talk to people and I want to give compliments, a lot of times I work really hard to not comment on appearance, to not even, you know, whether it's a boy or a girl, little kids, to not, you know, immediately have your first comment be, oh, they're so beautiful. Oh, how adorable. Oh, so cute. I try and compliment them for being creative or intelligent or friendly or, you know, something that's not always appearance. It's really tough. It's actually, okay, I say that was just me using filler words without thinking about them. It's not that tough. It's actually, once you get in the habit of it, you find that it's actually really easy to find things to compliment people for that have nothing to do with their appearance. You don't have to always tell someone that they're really good looking in order to give them a compliment. There's always things that you can find. So I do. But Okay, and then this is also connected to it. The other note I have here is the objectification of women, because I'm very, very aware, especially, you know, movies, video games, comics, whatever, that when women have stereotypical roles, when they are not fleshed out and they're clearly merely plot devices to move forward the male's story arc within the story, and I hate that. And I note when you have, especially in video games, when you have female characters that, God, even when the female character is well-designed, even when they have an interesting backstory and they actually have, you know, real strengths and real agency, and yet you look at the character design and clearly they are designed to be appreciated by the male gaze. It's like, okay, yeah, I get it, but, you know, it's an all-female society. Why would they dress like that in an all-female society? That is not practical. That is not, I mean, well, but it's an Amazon society of desert women. So they're wearing, and I'm like, yeah, but that's not traditional desert wear. Go look up traditional desert wear. No, what you're looking at is they're wearing outfits designed for harem girls that we think of traditionally as desert peoples. And so you would think, yeah, stereotypically in your mind, you're thinking, oh, yeah, yeah, this is what women in that sort of culture would wear. But no, that's harem girls. That's really inappropriate. And yet they're, you know, again, intelligent and they're well developed and they have all these capabilities and strengths. And yet, this is all from Breath of the Wild. I can't remember the name of the people. But apparently, Gerudos, there you go. But apparently, they dress that way because that's how the character design was way back when they first showed up in a much earlier version of Link. And so they've basically just kept stylized versions of that as they carry it forward. And it's just inappropriate. They couldn't redesign the characters in some way that would keep that flavor and yet not be so exploitative looking, I guess. All right. But so I'm very aware of that sort of stuff, and it bugs me when I see it, when it's unnecessary. Yeah, I don't mind sexuality or sensuality being included in the stories, the media that I enjoy. But again, you know, it has to serve the character and it has to serve the story, and it can't, when it's gratuitous, when it's obvious, it's distracting. But so what happens when it comes down to media that is created for the sole purpose of ogling? And it, I mean, look, when it comes down to porn, you know, clearly that has a specific purpose, and there's an argument over whether porn is exploitative to women or empowering to women. Or, I mean, I've seen the argument that, you know, porn is women who choose to do this. It is empowering to them. It's a feminist. I have no idea. I have no idea. I'm confused on whether or not it's appropriate. But, you know, I'm not going to argue whether it's good or bad. I'm not going to argue whether it's exploitative. It's just, it's a thing that exists and it's in its place. But then what about milder versions of that? I have a friend of mine on Facebook who posts, when he sees an attractive woman in a skimpy, extremely revealing outfit, a bikini shot or a lingerie shot, and these are clearly exploitative style photos. I mean, it's not quite softcore porn, but man, it's leaning in that direction. And he shares these across Facebook, and I finally got to the point where I had to start blocking the sites that those came from, because I didn't feel comfortable having them on my feed. I don't feel comfortable. I mean, I'm certainly not going to share something like that. When you put it out there just for mass consumption by people who aren't you, that's a little presumptive, I think. And it is, it gives the impression that that's what women are there for, is to be appreciated on a physical level. And I'm really uncomfortable with that. So I blocked that sort of stuff from my Facebook feed. Anything that's, you know, too close to porn, or even, again, I mean, if it's just going to be cheesecake shots, I'm not interested. I don't want to see that coming across my site. But now I have another friend who, he posts a lot of stuff from goth style, and when I say, I mean, it's like goth fashion, goth style, from Facebook feeds and blogs that focus on goth style. And when they come across, and he'll share them and repost them. And when I see them, you know, I'm with him. I like goth styling as well. I enjoy that aesthetic. I find that very attractive. And yet, when it hits my Facebook feed and I'm looking at these, yes, it's goth and steampunky and it's edgy and it's got, you know, all those elements of it that I'm like, yeah, I find that really cool. But it's all on skinny girls who look like models, and they're showing a lot of skin, and they're, some of them are very revealing, and the poses are obviously intended to be sensual, sexualized, and so I'm uncomfortable with them. I'm like, how is that any better than the bikini pics? Except that instead of, you know, being bikinis and lingerie, they're dressed up like goths, but it's still put out there for the express purpose of showing off the female form. And and I haven't blocked those sites yet, but it comes up enough that I'm like, I don't know how I feel about that. I just don't know how I feel about it, because, again, you know, there are people who are putting this stuff out there, because a lot of them, like, the goth stuff that comes across, there's some of it who are, these are people who are just people like cosplayers or whatever, and they're very proud of what they're doing, and they're putting it out there because they want people to see what they've come up with or what they've done. And they want to be appreciated. Some of them are just models who have been paid to wear these outfits. And I don't know. But again, these are models who are getting paid. They're participating in this happily, willingly, making a living doing it. And they're putting this out there because they want to be appreciated. I don't know. I don't know what to think about that. I honestly have no idea. I guess what it comes down to for me is I enjoy looking at an attractive female form, an attractive female face. I don't mind that. And I suppose if it's, you know, something that's being put out there intentionally to be consumed for that purpose, and you're enjoying, whether, I mean, and I'm not saying pornography necessarily, it doesn't have to be pornography, but if you're enjoying that on your own, with media that is intended for that purpose, that's fine. But if you're reposting it and putting it out there for everyone in your Facebook feed to see, I find that a little creepy and inappropriate. And you know, when it's pictures and media and stuff that you are consuming, okay, again, it's been created for a certain purpose. You're consuming it yourself. Great. Very different situation than if you're actually seeing someone in person and ogling them and appreciating them. I put it, that in quotes, appreciating them in person in a way that potentially could make them uncomfortable. I don't know if it would make them uncomfortable, but I probably would be if someone was staring at me like that on a regular basis. I can't imagine what it's like for women to be looked at in such a way all the time. And from, you know, women I've talked to, that, you know, this is something that starts from, you know, the moment they hit puberty, if not before that, that there are certain people who will always clearly, obviously, be looking at them in a way that is not appropriate, in a way that is objectifying, and that happens their whole life, all the time. I can't even imagine, and I certainly don't want to contribute to that. And so, so again, it's not even a matter of not staring at someone, obviously. It's a matter of not even staring when you think they're not looking. That was the whole, God, I can remember being a teenager and discovering that trick of being able to wear sunglasses when you're outside, especially on the beach. And, oh, look, now they can't see where your eyes are looking. You can stare all you want. And you know what? They know. They know. Quit doing that. It's not appropriate. Whatever minor thrill you're getting out of it is not worth the amount of discomfort you were potentially causing to other people. Wow. Anyway, all of this was super rambling. I don't know that I sorted anything out in my own head, but I'm leaving it out there, and I look forward to commentary from others to either tell me that I'm being an idiot or to tell me that my concerns are justified, but maybe I haven't even gone far enough, or to whatever your opinion is on it. I would be thrilled to hear it, because I honestly, it's just, I know how I behave, and I know how I feel about certain things, but I also, again, it's not about me. I'm not I'm not the one who's being objectified, or at least I don't think I am. If I am, I'm too oblivious to notice, so that's okay. Nothing's hurting me here. But I'm not the one that's harmed by this. I'm not the one who, you know, my stray comment or my obvious leering could, you know, encourage this attitude in others. I mean, I'm raising four sons. One of them's mostly raised, but two of them are mostly raised even. But I'm raising four sons, and they look to me for cues on what's appropriate behavior, and I certainly don't want to be passing this along, you know? So anyway, like I say, I look forward to your comments. We got to move on. We're all done with the meticulously plotted portion of the podcast. Instead, it's now time for the Pod-O-Matic! Hot dog, this is the Nerd Pride Radio Pod-O-Matic. At the end of every cast, I bring out R2, that was him, in his fully pimped out Pod-O-Matic bubble, and he rolls up random topics for me to talk about. And where do these topics come from, you ask? Well, that is where you come in. You want to hear me haver on about something? You send your question or topic to me by email, or better yet, in a private message on my forums at nerdprideradio.com/nerds, and I will add it to my Pod-O-Matic list. Pod-O-Matic is about whatever you want it to be. And my first number is 73. All right, 73. I don't even have the Pod-O-Matic list open. I am the worst host ever. How do you guys put up with this? Oh, man. Okay, so 2 weeks in a row, Kyle offered you a challenge. I offered you a challenge that, you know, the list was, before this week, 38% Kyle now, all right? And so the challenge was out there that you guys need to contribute, and 2 weeks in a row, you guys didn't. But now, this week, still nothing. But that's okay. That's okay. We still have tons of Pod-O-Matics. What are you guys worried about? It's, you know what? We can put up with some extra Kyle for a while. There's no problem with that, right? Yeah, that's what I figured. Okay. Anyway, the first number is 73, and here is my list. And I have stalled as long as I possibly can. So, there we go. 73 is from Kyle. Kyle says, Quentin Tarantino is the greatest filmmaker of our generation and maybe our time. Rank his 8 major movies. Okay, ranking his 8 major movies. We've got them listed here in parentheses. Pulp Fiction, Jackie Brown, and Inglourious Bastards. Uh-huh. Okay. I am going to throw Death Proof at the bottom. I think Death Proof is his the worst of those. Because it was supposed to be Grindhouse. The whole point is it was Grindhouse. And what Death Proof was not Grindhouse. Were you not watching? I mean, seriously, Rodriguez nailed that crap, all right? Rodriguez, seriously, with his whole gory, bloody, wet, dripping zombie story, that was Grindhouse material, all right? Death Proof was not. Death Proof was this, he loves these tense, standoff sort of dramas, and so he has one of those little scenes in it, the kind of thing that he pulled off really super well in Inglourious Bastards, with the milk scene, and this one isn't listed, Four Rooms. He did a segment on Four Rooms, and it was the segment with the lighter. You have that very tense scene where, The strength of the scene is really built on a lot of silence and a lot of nothing happening, but nothing happening in a way that everyone is on edge. Everyone is tense. Everyone's hanging by the edge of their seats. And then, oh, now we get a resolution. And he loves that kind of scene. And again, he did it really, really well in Inglourious Bastards with the milk scene. Didn't pull it off as well in Death Proof. And then the second half of Death Proof is, you know, just the guy hanging off the front of a car. But, well, it's a girl hanging out in front of the car, and then a guy. But, hey, you know what? It was not a good movie. It was, I did not enjoy Death Proof very much at all. So that one's at the bottom of the list. At the top of the list, I still have Pulp Fiction as my top movie from Quentin Tarantino. I know some people will put Inglourious Bastards at the top, Django, but Pulp Fiction is still my favorite. I've watched it a zillion times. I absolutely love it. So Pulp Fiction at the top. And then below that, it is probably, I know a lot of people are going to say Reservoir Dogs. A lot of people have Reservoir Dogs right at the top. I I'm telling you, I rewatched Reservoir Dogs, and there's so many weak spots in it. It's so rough, and there's so many so many weak spots, especially Mr. White. The whole plot hinges on Mr. White's faith in Mr. Orange, and him vouching for him, and on rewatching, God bless Harvey Keitel, but he just was not convincing. There was no good reason for Mr. White to buy into it. There was no reason for Mr. White to not go, hey, you guys are right. He's probably our traitor, and then just blow him away. There was no, it wasn't strong enough. I mean, there was a lot of good stuff in that movie, but it wasn't strong enough. I would put, all right, I'm going to go Pulp Fiction, followed by, I liked Hateful Eight and I liked Django. I don't know which one I like better. Probably Hateful Eight. And I know people had a lot of problems with that one. Hateful Eight and Django, I understand the issues people have with them. Don't care. Oh, wait, but there's Kill Bill in there. All right, no, you know what? All right, here we go. No more wasting time on this one. This question is over. It's going to be Inglourious Bastards, Kill Bill, Hateful Eight, Django Unchained, Inglourious Bastards, Reservoir Dogs, and then Jackie Brown, and then Death Proof. There you go. All right, I'm all done. Number one. Sorry, read that backwards. Number one is from Stan. And Stan offers us, I found that parenthood greatly increased my tolerance for grossness. All the poop, he puts in parentheses. Was this true for you as well? Oh, yeah, dude, come on. I mean, seriously, when it comes to poop, vomit, things that they will put in their mouths after they find it on the floor or after they picked it off of an animal or after they, things that they will put into different orifices, things that come out of different orifices, children are disgusting, absolutely disgusting. And yeah, you know what? You just have to roll with it. You do your best. You try and keep them safe. And you try to keep them out of the worst of the gross, but yeah, things happen. And yeah, you gotta clean it up. That's the thing, is once you get to that point, you're the adult. You gotta clean it up. You have to take care of it. So get over yourself. You don't really have much choice. 49 is from Kyle. Kyle says, are we ever going to get our space elevator? Okay, yes. What's the lifespan that a space elevator would have to pay for itself in savings of resources? Oh, please don't pause the podcast. I like it when you show your work. You're an ass. All right, I can pause the podcast all I want. Which I did just pause the podcast right there, but only because I needed a drink. I didn't think about anything, I promise. I wouldn't have paused the podcast for this one anyway, because I think a space elevator, it'll be expensive, but I think it will pay for itself within 20 years, if not sooner than that. I mean, look, launches into space are expensive. I mean, launches into space are really expensive. And once we get that elevator put up there, yeah, I know, billions and billions of dollars. But once we get up there and we have the ability to make lifts directly, I don't think it'll take long to pay it off at all. Because here's the other thing, is that once we have the space elevator, then we can go up and down a lot more often. All right? Because, okay, yeah, maybe right now, how often do we send stuff up to the International Space Station? You know? Are we going, what, 2 times a year, 3 times a year? I don't know how often we travel up there. But if we had the space elevator, we could be doing it once a week. Because, well, why wouldn't we? We have the ability. There's no waste of resources. You haul it up, you haul it back down. And there's no booster rockets that have to be discarded. There's no, it's not this huge expensive launch. It's just a, hey, we go up, we come back down. And yeah, it still might be expensive, but nowhere near the cost. I think we could be running, once the tower itself is built, I think we could be running up and down the space elevator. I'm going to guess we can make trips up there and back down maybe 12 to 20 times for the cost of one launch currently. Whatever, I don't know, we're not using space shuttles anymore, but whatever space plane launches or rocket launches that we're using to get astronauts to and from the International Space Station. Yeah, like I say, we could get 15 or 20 lifts out of the cost of one modern launch. So just at a wild guess, maybe even more than that. So, you know, we'd be doing lifts once a week and having no problems with it. And, yeah, it would pay itself off quick. But when are we going to get the space elevator? Yeah, I don't know. I think we're going to start I'm going to guess we start construction on a space elevator in 10 years. That's my guess, 10 years. And it is probably the kind of technology that for the next 30 years, every time you ask me, I'll say 10 years. I'm sure it's that kind of thing. But it feels like we're going to start construction relatively soon. I don't know how long it'll take to actually get the thing done, because holy shit, you're building a tower to space. But man, wouldn't that be cool? So cool. And again, it's a pet peeve, I'm going to keep harping on it, but then we can actually start working on living in space. Yeah, I know. We have an International Space Station, and we currently have people who live in space for a few months, a year, all right? And that's great. We do need that, and we can run experiments in space, and we do all sorts of cool stuff. But no, we need to live in space. We don't need to just, you know, take an extended safari to space. We need to live. And that means we need to build real habitats, real decent-sized habitats where hundreds of people can live, and we can simulate gravity. We can spin up portions of it or spin up the whole thing, however it is we work it out. But we need to have real simulated gravity up there. You know why? Because, again, don't forget this. We know we can't live in zero gravity. We know that. We know that extended time in zero gravity will kill us. All right? We're already aware of that. So we don't even know, can we live in Mars's one-third Earth gravity? We don't know. We have no idea if we know zero gravity will cause us to lose bone mass, and there's other issues that go on. Our skin breaks down. The skin simply starts to disintegrate after enough time in space. Did you know that? Skin. Yeah, try living without your skin. Yeah, almost as hard as living without your bones, isn't it? So we know zero gravity kills us. Zero gravity destroys lots of systems in our body. We don't even know if one-third gravity will kill us. We have no idea if it's survival. We don't know if one-sixth gravity on the moon. We don't know if that's survivable. But you know how we could find out? We could run extended experiments in a space station that actually simulated those environments, that we actually had spun up to various gravities. And we could have a full gravity. And we don't even know if a simulated gravity by spinning the space station, we have no idea if that simulated gravity, if it was full Earth normal, have no idea if we could even live in that because we've never tried. So let's get our space station, a real space habitat. Look, the International Space Station is a scientific and architectural wonder. I love that thing. All right, it is awesome. But let's get a real habitat going. Let's get something where we can get 50 people, 100 people, 1,000 people living in space, growing plants, growing food, recycling all their water, spinning up to simulate various gravities so that we can run extended experiments up there and find out if we can survive away from Earth. All right? Can we survive when we finally decide to move out and try and live somewhere where we can't just go back down to Earth every few months if we need to? Will we be able to live? Let's go find out. Oh, man. All right, I'm off my soapbox. Everyone's so excited because we're going to get a launch to Mars and we're going to send somebody to Mars. But okay, so we send somebody to Mars and they stay there for a year, 6 months, year and a half. What's the time limit on your first stay? And then you stay to Mars for, you know, a year and a half, 3 years, and then you come back? Or is everyone talking about a one-way trip to Mars? So we're talking about going to Mars and then dying there, because I don't think that sounds feasible at all. All right? Everybody wants to get to Mars because that's so romantic, that's so cool, and yet we don't even know that you could stay there. All you're going to do is be a tourist and come back home, or you'll die. Dude, why don't we find out? Why don't we find out we have the resources right here around the planet where we still have a safety net to fall into if we need to, and we have the ability to find out what do we need to bring with us, what do we need to set up, what resources have to be available if we're going to live on Mars, because we don't know. We want to send people to Mars, and we have no idea what it takes to live there and survive there. We have no idea, but we're going to send people there anyway, because we're idiots. Oh, that should have been my nerd rage. Oh, shoot. Oh, my God, I finished my nerd rage, and I forgot to leave a space for the sound drubbing. Oh, I'm going to have to figure out where to insert that. Oh, that's going to take a while. Shoot. Okay. Well, but you guys already heard the sound drubbing, so therefore you know I got it right. All right? But, man, shoot, I forgot about that. Okay, anyway. All right, 39. And I know this is only the fourth one, but it's going to be the last one. So, 39 is from Zimny. Zimny says, if you could transform into a car, what car would you like to be? Easy. I want to be a Tesla. I want to be one of these smooth-ass, super-safe, quiet-riding, stealth electric cars. Oh, my God, those things are so cool. Have you ever been in one? I've sat in one. And I mean, the engine wasn't running or anything. It wasn't like it was moving anywhere, but it was at a show. It was in a big outdoor event, and they had one parked, and it is so pretty. It's so pretty. Oh, I want one so bad. I would transform into a Tesla in a heartbeat. I am happy to do it. Okay, there you go. That was easy. Good question. That's the end. I am going to turn this over to GLaDOS, and she is going to recap this episode so far.
Remember when the platform was sliding into the fire pit and I said goodbye, and you were like,
no way.
And then I was all, we pretended we were going to murder you.
That was great.
This podcast is copyright 2017 by Nerd Pride Radio. The opening and closing theme is Death Metal Disco by Ian Kronk. My bumper music this week, Weezer's in the Garage, and Fingertips by They Might Be Giants. All the songs I use are available on iTunes. Check them out, buy them, enjoy them. I wouldn't put them in my podcast if I didn't love them. Don't forget, this podcast is a proud member of the Nerd Pride Network. Angry Geeks Versus, Me Like Trivia, maybe some of the other podcasts I've suggested to some of my friends, because, you know, they'd be awesome. Look, quality nerd podcasting from quality nerd people. If you want to help out Nerd Pride, subscribe to this podcast in iTunes or whatever podcatcher you use. Write us 5-star reviews because those make a difference. And recommend it to your friends. That's the biggest thing. If you enjoy it, spread the word and let other people enjoy it as well. Word of mouth is my bread and butter, people. Remember, I am always looking for you listeners to do my work for me. Oh, it makes me make it so much easier here. Don't forget to send me questions and topics for the Podomatic. Watch out every week on the forums and on Facebook for listener betrayal. And if you have a really interesting nerd fact about an upcoming episode number, send it to me and save me all of that grueling research. My contact information, mike@nerdprideradio.com, @nerdprideradio on Twitter, facebook.com/nerdprideradio. But to be completely honest, the very best way to talk to me, come sign up for my forums at nerdprideradio.com/nerds. You sign up there, send me a message. We will hang out together and become best friends in the world. What fun. Now it's time for listener betrayal. Before I start recording every podcast, I go out to Facebook and to my website at nerdprideradio.com/nerds, and I post up, hey guys, I'm recording right now. If you want to get in on it, post here. I'll read it off at the end of the cast, which is what I'm doing right now. So, straight up, let's go on over to Facebook, and Facebook says I have at least a couple of responses. But, you know, it's taken its time. It clearly doesn't care. So, you know how Facebook is. I should, you know, seriously, during the pause there for the music, I really should have just gone in and had all these pulled up, but I'm just not that smart. So, oh, here it is. All right, I see it. Hey, look at that. Oh, my God, my mom's in here. This is great. Let me tell them that I'm finished. And first is from my brother Kyle. And Kyle says, I just got back from Mexico visiting the Mayan ruins and diving with stingrays. It was freaking awesome. So, what'd you do this last week? You know, same. Whatever, dude. Actually, this week, I worked. Yeah, I worked. So it was exciting. And wait. I did have a dentist appointment, and I took Eli to an orthodontist appointment. That was pretty awesome. And then today, we spent most of the day out in the backyard cutting out limbs and little trees and bushes from the back corner that aren't supposed to be there. And then we got the truck and we hauled them all out to the burn pile. And that was pretty cool. So is that, I mean, that's like swimming with stingrays, right? Yeah. Okay. And now, right after Kyle's message, my mom's message that I was so excited about is her just rubbing it in. She says, yeah, me too. And I'm sure she smiled that smug little smile when she said it. I'm sure that you could hear it in my voice, right? Oh, man. Yeah, you guys, I don't know if you, any of you can see the pictures, but they had a blast this week. They took a bunch of the teenage homeschooling kids and parents as chaperones, and they went down to Mexico, and they had a blast. So very jealous. Very jealous. Looks like they had a really good time. And then next one is from James. James, a long-time listener, first-time betrayer. Nice. I don't know if this is a James that I know or not. I'm trying to make out their little Facebook picture here. I'll worry about Facebook stalking them later. In the meantime, he says, I've fallen way behind on my podcasts over the last month or two, and last week was the first Nerd Pride episode I've listened to in a while. Even though we've never actually met, it was like running into an old friend and getting to hang out and catch up for a little while. Thanks for putting this together every week and keeping me company on the drive to and from work. Holy crap! Yeah, anytime, dude. That's what I do this for. Thank you. Wow. That is really cool. I'm moved. Yeah, don't you hate it when you fall behind on your podcasts? I swear, the last 3 weeks, it feels like there's been like 20 unlistened to episodes piled up. Different podcasts go through cycles. Some of them only come out sporadically or once a month or every 2 weeks. And for some reason, it was like this perfect storm of everything came out all at once. Like, I had been running so low, I decided to go out and subscribe to a bunch of new podcasts because, like, I need something to fill up this space. And then as soon as I did it, all of my old podcasts all had new episodes one after the other, and they just piled up. And these new ones I subscribed to, never did get to them. I finally just unsubscribed to them because I just wasn't motivated to listen to them because, oh, look, all my old stuff's back now. So finally, just today, I got through even Angry Geeks Versus. They're friends of mine. They're in the Nerd Pride Network. And I had two of their episodes backed up that I hadn't listened to yet. I mean, from my own network. What an awful person I am. So I finally got all of my Angry Geeks Versus listened to today. I even got through a Nerdist. I don't listen to everything from Nerdist. But finally got caught up. And now I think I'm just down to, I've got half of a Nerdist left and a couple of No Such Thing as a Fish. Ah, finally. I mean, it just feels like I have, and now it's getting to be the weekends. Tomorrow, you know, there'll be a new No Sleep podcast. There'll be a new, obviously, a new Nerd Pride. There'll be a new Angry Geeks Versus coming out. So, you know, I'm right on track now. Things are going to get back to normal. Oh, I feel good. But anyway, dude, James, thank you so much for writing in. I really appreciate it. This is really cool. I hope you keep coming back because I would love to talk to you more. This is really cool. And then Nellie says, okay, I'm here. What are your most favorite board game mechanics? What specifically about some board games, do you love the most? Oh, specific mechanics. That, I have never specifically thought about that. But let me see. I like building things. I've discovered that part of the appeal to Forbidden Island to me is just the setup. I get to build a new island every time. That's cool. I enjoy that. Carcassonne. Oh, Carcassonne. The whole putting the tiles together in a big old puzzle array and trying to find, you know, get pieces that fit into the right slots. That's really cool. And then there is one board game. I've seen it played. It's a tower building thing, and they've got these white pieces that build towers. And I don't think I have the name quite right, but it sounds something like that. I can't remember the name of it. But they have it at our game night, and I've seen it now twice in a row, and it never works out that I actually sit down and play, but I've sat there and watched other people play it for a while. I'm not sure I know what all the rules are. I have no clue what's going on. But they keep building these towers, and then they move off of them and onto them, and it's the whole idea of building inside the game is really cool. I like building, apparently. I didn't know that. So that's cool. What other ones? I mean, I like so much stuff. I like resource allocation. I like games where you have to make some decisions because, you know, 2 turns from now or 3 turns from now, you're going to have stuff coming in from different directions. And so, you know, you have to allocate your resources now, plan a little bit ahead, make sure you've got the right stuff in the right spots. Oh, God. Speaking of building, I just got in on a Kickstarter for Ursa Minor, and Ursa Minor is a clever pun because it is bears that literally climb Mount Honeycomb and they go mining for honey inside this honeycomb mountain, and so they are Ursa Miners. I know, clever, right? And I noticed it because Anthony Amato, who is Tony from Cardboard Fortress Games, a guy who is going to be delivering my Laser Riders any moment now, design Kobolds and Resistor, I noticed that he was doing the graphic design on it. And so I recognized the name. I decided to watch their little video. And it looks really cool because to put the game together, again, you got a bunch of little hex tiles that build this mountain. And so you have to lay them down to build this mountain in layers. And it's a random kind of build, so it's a little bit different every time. And just watching them put together the mountain, I'm like, I'm sold. I'm in on this one. I want to do this. Even if it's just part of the setup, I like the building. So, but, you know, hey, that's me. I'm trying to think if there's any others in particular, but not really. I just like board games. I like a lot of different stuff, and it just depends. I like social mechanics. I like playing, you know, even if it's just, you know, playing apples to apples or cards against humanity, playing Secret Hitler, things where you're having to come to some kind of agreement or this bluffing and voting and this. I don't know. I like lots of stuff. But yeah, building is one of those things that just trips a trigger in me, and it's like, oh, it's a building game. Okay, I'm in. I'll take a look at it. And it doesn't mean I'm necessarily going to be sold on the game, but it draws me to it. It makes me want to check it out. And I really like that. So, all right. Thank you, guys. Wow, that was a really good turnout on Facebook. And now I'm going to go back to my website. Let me do a little refresh here, make sure I'm not missing anything. I only have one, it looks like, on my website, and it's from Produce Farmer. Awesome to see you, Produce Farmer. And let me put up my done. We are now completely finished. So we are no longer accepting applicants. Done. Come on. There we go. All right. So Produce Farmer says, "Hello, Mike. Happy Mother's Day weekend. I hope you have something special planned for Mrs. Jones." Oh, dude, do I? No, not really. Can you hear Eli back there? Nope. Her special request was, "Hey, can you guys keep out of my hair for the weekend? Because I really need to finish all my grading, and I have to have quarterly reports done. I have to have everything finished and ready so that we can close down school after the next week." Oh, okay, we can do that. So, in fact, for Mother's Day, this is just tragic. This is terrible of us. But she has requested that maybe we all want to just go out and see Guardians of the Galaxy 2 without her tomorrow so that she can get us out of the house so she can get stuff done without everyone running around. Because even when we're trying to be quiet and helpful, we can sometimes be loud and annoying. So we may wind up going out to see a movie without her tomorrow because she saw the first Guardians of the Galaxy and she went, "Eh, whatever. It was no Avengers." She just wasn't as thrilled about it. And we're like, we were talking about going to see Guardians of the Galaxy 2. We're like, "Hey, we can see that for Mother's Day." She's like, "Why would I want to see that?" We're like, all of us, we really did. We were like, "But you loved the first one." She goes, "Is that the dumb one with the raccoon?" "Yeah? No, I hated that movie." "What?" And not hate, but she's like, "Eh, it was all right. I mean, it was whatever. I could care less if I see the next one." Really? Oh, so sad. So we will do stuff for her. but we won't do it this weekend because, man, this is a busy weekend. She said, let's just put it off, and we'll go out and we'll do something special next weekend. But the boys did send her flowers, which she was greatly appreciative of.
No, they showed up.
Would you stop? It had your name on it. It said it was from you. Can you just take credit for it?
No, because then that's lying.
This is good lying. Yeah, kids are so dumb. So they.
No, I'm 13.
A large bouquet of flowers showed up at work on Friday afternoon that said, Happy Mother's Day, love your boys. And she was thrilled to death with it. She loves getting flowers. And that made her feel really good. Since I knew we wouldn't be able to do anything this weekend, she got flowers. So that was cool. And then we'll do something later. Now, next thing from Produce Farmer, he says, tell me about your signature Magic the Gathering deck. Oh, what? No, this is good. All right. It says, what are the key cards and what creatures do you especially enjoy summoning? Oh, this is a wonderful question. In fact, let me go get my deck. Okay, I got my cards here. Look, when I first bought the cards, my intent was I wanted to go white and green. I just, I'd played a little bit with Aiden, and he had described the different types of terrain and what kind of things you can usually expect from each color, where their focus lies. And so from that, I decided I wanted white and green. I just knew that was the feeling I had. And so I went out and I bought a white-green starter deck, and then got some extra cards, and I've kind of fleshed it out a little bit. But it is actually, even though I wanted to go white-green, it winds up being a mostly white deck. It is a strong white deck with a fair amount of green. So I would say of all the creatures I have, I would guess I have 75% white, 25% green is my balance. Now, out of that, the white cards that I have are the core. And I have a lot of them, and I like them. I love when I get on the battlefield, what I love is having lots of little creatures that support each other. A lot of little cards out on the field that all support each other, and then bring in some of the ones that I have. What's the one that is always so damn useful? What is her name? It is an elf who is there. She is Jaraga, the Jaraga Auxiliary. She's an elf that comes out white card, but when she gets out, she's got the ability to every round, as long as I got the mana for it, she can start putting out +1/+1 tokens on different creatures. And so, and I've got a lot of different cards that can give that little +1/+1 boost. And so essentially, look, for those of you who don't play Magic, what I'm talking about is just imagine that I have a bunch of cards that aren't necessarily terribly powerful on their own, but when you put three or four of them together, they can keep boosting each other. It's just little boosts, but they add up, and it adds up to make some fairly powerful cards. Eventually, I'll have four or five of them out on the field that are all running, mid-level and doing really well at it. And I really enjoy that. I like having that. So, and on top of that, I would guess that a third to a half the units I have are flying units, which means that, depending on what the opponent's deck is, a lot of times they can't touch me for a while, which I really enjoy as well. So, as far as specific cards, I don't have any particularly powerful cards. I do have one angel card that I pull out that, man, when the timing on this one works out right, this angel comes out and I got a heal for every creature I've got out, and I usually have a lot of creatures out. So I like the way that one works out. I've also got it's one of my few green cards, but it's the something seed, and when he dies, he's replaced by a creature that is as powerful as however many creatures I have that are dead already. So if I can time him towards the end of the game after I've had a bunch of people picked off, then I can bring this guy out, and then my enemies are afraid to kill him because they know if they kill him, he's going to come back as something more powerful. I enjoy that one as well. I wish I could remember his name, but yeah, see, I'm not. Once I get my people out here, I know my cards, but I can't think of them off the top of my head. But anyway, that's my Magic deck. It's really fun.
Magic is fun!
So, it says, which color of Magic is the fearless girl to your charging bull because of how unfun it feels to play against. My colors used to be white and green back in the day, and I detested playing blue players because I had to second-guess myself on every one of my turns when they had a couple of extra mana laying around. Fortunately for me, well, actually, probably unfortunately for me, I'm playing against my kids most of the time, and they have very specific decks that Aiden's got a great black and white deck he uses. He's got a red deck he uses. Noah has a kind of a mixed deck, but it is mostly red, red-ish. He calls it his radish deck. And so I don't face a lot of blue. So at this point, I've not really had much problem because, again, I'm playing just my kids and just, you know, we have the same decks that come in and out. I don't have a whole lot of breadth of experience on this. But now that you've said that, oh yeah, blue would suck. Blue would suck because blue would suck for me in any game because it's too much thinking. It's too much wondering what they've got hidden. When someone's that spell heavy, I believe blue is more magic, more spells and instants and stuff, right? Yeah? Okay. That would bug me. Oh, dude, that would suck. And then Produce Farmer ends with, keep up the great work, have an epic weekend. Dude, already working on it, so thank you. God, you guys are great. You are the best. All right, we are all done, so I am going to sign off here. I appreciate you guys being around. I love you guys. You're awesome. But say goodbye, Eli.
Goodbye. Yeah.
Say goodbye, R2. Oh, wait. Say goodbye, Noah.
Goodbye.
Goodbye, R2. There we go. Now we're out.